nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey everyone, I'm here today with the CEO of Operation Phantom Support, Army veteran and retiree and serial entrepreneur, John, quote-unquote, Nick Valentine. Nick, how you doing today, brother?
I'm doing good, Travis, man. Thanks for having me on, brother.
We've been meeting to hook up for a long time, and we're actually in a couple of online groups together, and I just got to say that I'm a fan of what you're doing, the way you're running Operation Phantom Support, what you do as a serial entrepreneur, and that you take the time to help mentor and train other people that are in your group. It speaks a lot about who you are to your character, and that you actually back up what it is that you say with what you do. And I love that about you.
Yeah, that's that old school NCO in me. I just kind of, you practice what you preach, you teach what you learn, so the person coming up behind you can take your place when you leave. So, I mean, that's been my mentality since I was a young soldier. And luckily, I kept that throughout my lifestyle and my life and my livelihood. So that's kind of where we're at with it. Just training the trainers. So that's it.
Train the trainers. I'm over here helping the helpers. I love it. Hey, tell us a little bit what you do with Operation Fan Support and how that all works.
Yeah, so what Operation Fan Support is basically we support active duty military veterans with honorable discharges and first responders and their families with day-to-day living assistance. So we provide programs that help them with the things they need on a daily basis, like food, groceries, furniture, clothes, car repairs, birthday cakes, Christmas toys, backpacks for school. So primarily, it's mostly focused on the family, not necessarily the soldier or the veteran directly. It's more so that soldier and veteran knows if I need something for my family, I can go to OPS and they're going to take care of it, so I don't have to worry about it, so I can focus at work and I can do what I got to do and I can take care of myself. Because we all know as a soldier, your company commander could yank you back and put you in the barracks and you're fed and you're housed, but your family be struggling. So the concept I had when I got out to start this was, yes, I'm doing it for the soldier and veteran, but more for their families, because I grew up as a military dependent my whole life. My dad was in the Navy for 20 years. He retired CW3. And then literally 2 months after he retired, I went into the Army. And then I went as in the Army for 20 years. So I lived my life as a dependent. And then I grew up through the military. I didn't have any kids till the end of my career because I didn't want to do what my dad did to me, and not that he did it on purpose, but I wanted to be home for my kids. So I waited until I was like 35 to have my first kid. So I'd be home. So like when I retired, my daughter was 4. So now I know I'm going to be around for everything she's going to go through, and she's going to see her dad everywhere. So that's kind of that was my mindset, but that's kind of what we did. But the charity itself is more built, and I built it a little different than a lot of nonprofits, because I asked the soldiers and veterans who need support to donate $20 once a month. So they're a part of their own solution, but they're also supporting all the other families. So we're all chipping in together to help each other as a military community. We're all chipping in a little bit to help all of our families be better off where we live and make our community stronger. So that's kind of the concept I took. Plus, soldiers can be a little prideful, sailors, whatever branch you're in. But you can be a little prideful asking for help. But if you're donating already, you kind of feel like you're making an impact already. So now I can ask because I'm part of it. So I'm part of it so I can ask. And it isn't going to be that pride. It's not going to be a way to ask for help. And I've had actually soldiers tell me that's the reason they donate here, because if they do need something, now they know they can come here and get it, because they're a part of the solution for their own family and the other families that live in the area. So that's a big deal for me. So that's kind of why I built it the way I built it. And I wanted us to not be completely dependent on grants or federal money or state money. We don't get any of that. I just started with a grant writer last month. And it was a big step for me, because I've been staying away from that for a long time. But I'm like, look, we can't do it. COVID's killing us. So I went and hired a grant writer and said, hey, and I hired him, pay him $2,000. He writes 20 grants for me. If he doesn't raise me at least the $2,000, then I get the $2,000 back. So I said, okay, it's win-win for me. I can't lose. I can only benefit. So let's do it. So I paid him $2,000, and now he's writing 20 grants for me. And hopefully those will come to fruition here in the next couple months. And we'll see some stuff where we can pull our heads out of the fire, so to speak, and be all right. But that's what we do here at Operation Fan Support.
That's awesome. I love that you have that your soldiers are part of the solution. I did some Christmas events up here in Oklahoma City. We helped the Christmas Connection, and you opened the store. You've got all sorts of different clothing items from infant up to maybe someone a little bit more senior than you, a little bit more experienced, and they do the same thing. You would come in and you have to give at least $1 to get in the door. And when they feel like they're not just receiving only, they feel that they're part of it, they're actually contributing to the whole. They have a lot more pride with what they do. They go through, they treat everyone with respect, and they get served what they needed. Some people need long term, but sometimes people only need it every now and again. It's nice to have that option.
Yeah, I get a lot of that too, because a lot of soldiers come in, they'll donate $20. You see that, like I tell them, our food pantry, we feed between 400 and 600 people every Saturday when we open our food pantry. So that 400, 600 people that actually physically come through, I tell them all the time, the person in line in front of you, the person in line in back of you, they're donating $20 too. So that family is helping you, the family behind you is helping you, you're helping the families in front of you and behind you. So you feel like you're a part of this whole solution of all these families that come, you're helping all those families. Plus all those families are helping your family. So when you look at everybody in this line, you should say thank you to each other for being a part of this. And that's what we do here. And no one looks down at anybody here. No one judges you at all. I don't care what rank you are. You can be E1, you can be E9, you can be O5. I have an O5 and O6 wives that come in and get food all the time because they got kids in college and their shit's struggling because they got 3 or 4 kids in college and blah, and they're not making as much as they used to make. So I tell them, I don't give a shit. As long as you make your donation, you're the same as everybody else here. So we're all good. So just come on in and let's go. We can help you help you. So that's the attitude we try to take, is that we're about helping each other. So that's what it's all about.
And I can just picture the line of people, because I've been to food banks before. I grew up in that where we needed assistance. And I just can picture and think back to everyone standing in line at the food bank when I was growing up in the 80s and early.
Oh, yeah, we got a line going all the way out around the corner of our building, all the way up the street. I mean, literally. It's crazy. It's nuts.
But I bet they're engaging. I bet you the lines are different, because the people in my line, they were looking at the floor. They didn't want to make eye contact with each other. They weren't proud that they were there because they weren't part of the solution. And I love what you're doing, where everyone is working together for the
person. It is actually kind of comical to be out there in the line because they're talking. A lot of people hugging each other. They see, oh, I've seen you since last week. They'll hug. I mean, COVID is a little different, but the norm here is everybody's excited to see each other because they all know we're helping each other. So how's your family doing? I'm doing good. Hey, my friend just got a birthday cake from here. Yeah, my son got one last month. Yeah. So they talk and they talk about how much this helps them and how much they're happy to be a part of it. And that's what really gives me the drive to keep coming back to work every day, is that I know that when I go home from work, that 500 or 600, like this Saturday, we literally had, I think it was 577 people came through the food pantry, which impacted about 2,000 plus family members, you know, that based on how many family members they have in each of their households. So that when I went home, I'd ask that, Jesus, 577 people just got support from us. They got food. They got eggs and butter and cheese and milk and all this other stuff, fruits, vegetables, and potatoes, all kind of stuff. I said, you know, that family's going to eat better this week. You know, they're going to have a better light. They're going to have a better dinner, a better lunch, whatever. And it's because of all of us chipping in to help each other. And that's a good feeling to have. And that's why I tell people online on our Facebook page, I said, it's only because of you guys that we're even surviving. It's only because of your monthly donation that we even survived this long. So just keep doing what you can do to help. If you can throw a few extra bucks in this month, throw it in. If you can't, we understand, or I'd drive on. But you know, we do it all the time. And it's just running a nonprofit is the most satisfying thing I've done in my life, probably, but it's also one of the hardest things I've done in my life, because there are a lot of challenges to doing this. It's not as easy as people think it is. So that's the fun part.
Yeah. The challenge that's worth your time, energy, and effort. I love it. You know, I mentioned that, you know, growing up that we used food banks. We had that American dream. You know, they say you have to have 7 streams of income to be a millionaire. Well, we had 7 streams of income. You know, we had child support, welfare, food stamps, and Social Security, and alimony, and SSI, and all those fun things. Well, we weren't living that millionaire lifestyle. You know, we were in need of those services, and that's just the way it was. That was our reality. And it's because of people like you and what you're doing is why I'm doing what I'm doing right now. Is because I always had someone like you that helped keep us sheltered, clothed, and fed. And without you, I don't know where my next meal would come from. And I thank you. And it's no kidding, the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing now with the nonprofit architect and helping the helpers.
Yeah, your stuff's amazing, man. I've been following you for a while. Like I said, we linked up a long time ago, but that was when you were doing stuff overseas, and we missed out on our first chance to do this. But, you know, I've been following you for a long time and supporting a lot of what you're doing. And I think what people need to understand about veterans that get into this lane is that it's a very challenging aspect of business. Because you have the business side and then the nonprofit side. So you're a great mentor to teach them that there's two sides of this. There's two parts to all this stuff. It's not just the fun part that's a nonprofit. There's other things. So that's great. And I think what you do is amazing, man. So, yeah.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. I love that you have what we would call in the industry a membership site. People are paying a monthly fee to be a part of what we're doing. I know there's a lot of nonprofits out there, and there's not a right way and a wrong way to do that. A lot of people feel uncomfortable asking for people to money to be a part of this thing. And I don't feel that way. And I'm glad that you don't feel that way either, because without that monthly income from the people that are participating and working together, you said that you wouldn't have enough money to keep this thing going. And some months it's great and some months it's tight, but it's amazing that you're able to provide those services. And you actually give yourself to your organization each and every month. And I think that's important for later to do, because it's much easier to say, join me as I give, than to say that you should give to help support this cause.
It's that basic military function. You don't ask a soldier to do something you're not willing to do yourself. So what I do is I donate $100 every month personally to show soldiers. I'm only asking you to donate 20. I'm going to donate five times what I'm asking you just because I'm that invested in doing this for you and your family and my family and all the other families that need it. If you want to donate more, don't donate more. Go find another soldier to sign up with you. Have him sign up, donate 20. So you both keep it at 20. It's only 67 cents a day. It's not going to kill you. Don't go to McDonald's twice this month and you'll be fine. That's all you got to do is skip McDonald's twice this month or Burger King or whatever. Just skip it twice this month and that'll cover the 20 bucks. You're good. So eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich twice and you're good to go for lunch. And then you can support a whole lot of families and make sure your family's squared away too. So that's our sell, is become something bigger than yourself, support your community, support yourself and these hundreds of other families that need it, and feel good about yourself when you go home, because not only did you help your own family, but you helped 500 other families. So how do you not feel better? And that's the sell we use. So yeah.
That is awesome. And you are stationed, or you're not stationed, you live outside Fort Hood in Killeen, Texas. And Fort Hood, if I'm not mistaken, is the largest military installation in the U.S.
Yeah, it's always number one or two. It's us, between us and Fort Bragg all the time, which one's actually the big, but it rotates. But we're basically the top, we're in the top two all the time. So that's funny. There's 40,000 soldiers on Fort Hood.
Yeah, my brother-in-law was actually stationed at Fort Hood. It was his first duty station.
It was my last, and I'm, you know, and then I just stayed here because my wife and I were tired of traveling and PCS and then moving. So we said the kids are going to be in school, so we'll just put roots in here. We'll just make this our family land. But boom, that's what we did. We just put roots in. I've lived here longer than anywhere in my entire life. I've lived here since 2005. Every other 3-4 years of my life, from when I was a baby till I was 39 years old, I moved every 3 years. I came to Fort Hood when I was 34. And I've been here ever since. And I've been here since 2005. So it's 2020. So I've been here 15 years. I've never lived anywhere that long my whole life, because we moved every 3 years in the Navy. And then when I came in the Army, I moved every couple of years when I'm in the Army. So, but yeah, I've actually got foundations here. I've really become part of this community. I have a lot of relationships and mentorships and networking with this community. A lot of people know me because of what I do and the amount of people I help. So they want to be involved. So that's been another positive thing that's come out of this too, is that, you know, just the legacy that I'm building for my family that lives here is going to be strong by the time we're done. So yeah, that's what my goal is, to set that up for my family. So yeah.
That's fantastic. You're also a serial entrepreneur, and you've got your hands in all sorts of things like franchises, using the DoD skill bridge. I've talked about the DoD skill bridge a little bit on the show. It's someone using their last 6 months of their military time to go partner with an organization and be an unpaid intern. You're still getting your military paycheck, but you're learning something in an industry that you want to be involved in. Can you talk a little about what that is and what that's like to set up?
Yeah, so basically our nonprofit started another program called Veterans to Employment. So it's Vets to Employment. And what it is we've linked up and we've linked in with Joel Stewart's a friend of mine. He's the one who's helped me build my franchise out. So what my idea behind the whole whole veteran to employment was, is I wanted to help veterans or soldiers getting out of the military to be able to find a track where they could actually eventually own a business and not work for somebody, not be another Joe Snuffy on the road. In a couple of years, they'd actually own the business. So what we did with SkillBridge is we got involved with SkillBridge, and I have a guy here I hired. His name's Mark Bauer. He's a retired military too. Great guy. Amazingly smart with it when it comes to all. He's a master's degree and all his other stuff. He's all educated and all that hula stuff. A really smart dude. We got into SkillBridge under the concept of these guys are going to go through. We have a manager's course that we put them through. So a retail manager course you go through first. You graduate from that. Then you can apply for the apprenticeship program with us and then go in the apprenticeship program, which falls under SkillBridge. And then you come work for me at my franchise and I make you an assistant manager paying you 20 bucks an hour. Now, while you're still in SkillBridge, we're not paying you because you're still in the military. But if you're not, we pay you 20 bucks. But when you're finished with SkillBridge, for instance, the 6 months are up, and you still want, you want to go do it, then we hire you as a manager. You come on as a manager. I pay you 20 bucks an hour to be my manager to learn more of the franchise business side of it. And then eventually what we do is me and my investment group, our veteran franchise investment group, we back you to help you open up your own franchise. And then what we do is we open it. We own it. The franchise group opens it and owns it. The investment group opens it and owns it. And then we make you the manager of that one, pay you 25 bucks an hour to run it. But every year you can buy 15% of it. So in 4 years, you own 60%. So you own it. Then we step back, and then in 2 more years, you can buy another 14% and own 74%, and we only own 26. And then we're basically just there if you need us for support. But you also have the franchise to support you, so you don't really need us. But we're just there collecting our money because we invested in you to start the business, so you're going to get that, plus all the other accolades you get. And I'm going to tell you right now, that Axe Monkey franchise that I'm starting, and within 3 years, I will personally be making over $50,000 a month if I keep that place at 20% occupancy. which will be nothing for an axe throwing thing where you get to come in and throw axes at stuff. And I have a rage room and I'll keep that at Fort Hood. I'll keep that place packed. So I have a potential to make a fortune doing this, right? So what I'm showing these soldiers is, look, why would you want to get out of the army and go to work for somebody else and make 10, 15 bucks an hour if you're lucky? But then you have a boss, you have somebody, you know, whereas you come into this front, you come down this lane in 4 years after you separate the army, you will own a business. And when, let me tell you something, even when you get in charge of the business, like when we put you in that franchise and make you the owner of the business, we're not going to do nothing. You're running it. You don't answer to us. You run it. You technically own it, but you're not the owner. You're getting paid by us in the beginning, and then you'll buy your percentage, and then eventually you'll officially own it in 4 years. So 4 years after you separate from service, you can own a franchise business, not just an LLC business you started that you may be able to be, you may or may not. This is going to be a business that's going to be guaranteed you're going to be making money and making good money, depending on which franchise you choose. Because we already have all the layouts, what they should make based on, you know, all the... But the skill bridge part of it is wonderful because any branch of service can come to us now because they'll find us a skill bridge. And most of our class, all of our classes right now are virtual. They're all either Zoom or over internet, or then you just get assignments and you do them and you send them in and da-da-da. And then when we get to the part where you get into that part where you become an apprentice, that's when you'd have to physically come out here and or we would open a franchise wherever you're at. And then we would fly out there. I would fly out there basically and help you stand it up, get it going, make you the manager, start paying you 25 bucks an hour to run it. And then I fucking leave. You know, I leave, excuse my language. I leave and come back here and we just monitor and help you out with whatever you need as far as that goes. But then I said, at the end of the year, you buy 15%. The next year, you buy another 15. So in 4 years, you own it and then you're done. But then you own a business and it's a franchise your family can keep forever. Like that's something you can pass down to your kids later on. They can become the manager and owner later when you're done, you want to retire. And then you can just give yourself a little percentage every month and move out and your kids own it. You know what I mean? And then their kids own it. And so it's a legacy type thing that I'm trying to establish for soldiers and veterans in this area because I think we have over 40 franchises right now in our catalog that people can pick from. It could be as small as the Axe Monkey all the way to like a pool repair company to a house cleaning company to a pesticide company that does, you know, pests. So we have a plethora of different franchises. So we're working right now to get it. We even got franchises from Europe that want to get involved with us now, that are European companies that want to come to America, and they're willing to give up more percentage of their shit just to get their business over here. So they're willing to give us even more to get their franchise started over here. So it's going to be huge for soldiers. I think we've already got soldiers reaching out to us right now. We literally have just opened the doors. We haven't got any. I'm trying to get funding in right now to support because it's about $5,000 to send a soldier through the course. So I'm trying to get scholarship money built up right now that we can pay scholarships or they can request to get a scholarship, or we'll have scholarship money we can provide for a certain amount of soldiers every year so we can get them through this. But the goal is that we get these soldiers that get out of the Army or veterans who are, or even spouses. That's the thing too. We're even training spouses. If you're a veteran spouse or an active duty military spouse, we'll put you through the course. You just won't go through the skill bridge part if you're not active duty. But the point is we can get you through the course. And then that way you can be scheduled. There's one that's a kickboxing franchise. And you don't need a lot of space. It's just they come in and do stations. They come in at lunchtime, do all their stations, go take a shower, and get up, but they're done. But they own the franchise. And all they do is have the building and have their own. So it's crazy, man, the opportunity here. And working with Joel as his expertise with the franchise stuff, he's opened our eyes to so much thing because now our veteran franchise initiative group, which is our investor group, we've got 6 people in the group right now. And we're always looking for more investors too that want to come in because they get 10%. And for every 10,000 they put into the investment group, they get 10% of that franchise. So if they put in 20,000, they get 20% of our cut of the 40%. So the way, you know, because if the franchise group gets 40 whatever percent, the other guy gets 60, then our percentage is based on how much we put into it is what we get out of the percentage of what we get as a franchise group. But the point is, you're talking residual money for the rest of your life if you're in the franchise group. Because I mean, you ain't gonna do nothing once you're in the franchise group, you just get the money. But me, I'm a big part of it because I'm gonna be the guy training people out and trying to walk these guys down the lane. Because some guys might want to go through, I just want to get that manager training so I can get hired at Walmart and be an assistant manager, whatever. All right, fine. That's what you want to do. Looking, more power to you, brother. Go. Boom. We'll get you through the course. We'll get you grad. Because you get a legit DOD certified thing. And it's a certified retail manager's course that's verified by Walmart. They're verified by Walmart, Target, Home Depot, Lowe's, like all these major industries. They've all recognized this as a very, gives you an edge up if you apply for a job there, basically, like, because it's going to give you an edge up if you have the certification. So we tell everybody that too. So if you just want a job, that's fine. We'll help you find a job. And we'll even help you get employed because we've already reached out to all of them. And then, yeah, they'll give an interview right away, blah, blah, blah. So that's the big thing with the vets part. But the skill bridge thing is exciting because any branch of service, it could be Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, when they're getting ready to get out, they can reach in and find us and say, yeah, I want to do that because I want to own a franchise or I want to, you know what I'm saying? And boom. And the funny thing is we can't really sell it as the franchise piece for skill bridge because they're looking for the job. So we sell, hey, no matter what, we're going to hire him as a manager for one of these franchises. Whether they want the franchise or not, it's not as important as they're still going to be the manager. So for instance, if you came to me and said, yeah, I'm John, I want to do, and then halfway through, you're like, no, I don't want to own franchise, but we're going to keep you on as a manager anyway. So we keep paying you, right? And then when another veteran comes in, he wants the franchise, we might send him to the same franchise you're at, make him an assistant manager, pay him, da-da-da, but eventually in 4 years, he'll own it. So while you work in there, you would have to build that relationship with him so you can keep your job when he owns it. Because he'll have the decision to fire and fire, not us anymore. But that's how it'll work. But we still keep that person employed with a job because that's our kind of sell to Skillbridge. We'll keep him on as a $20 an hour job starting as a manager or assistant manager with us. And then eventually lead them to this franchise thing if they want it. If they don't want it, that's fine. They'll just set up that business and just work there as a manager. And even if, so for instance, you fired him, we might still reach out to, okay, come here with us. We're going to send you to another one to be another manager at this franchise. And we'll rehire you because that's how we're going to keep that relationship because we want to keep that relationship anyway because he potentially still could want to be the franchise owner and say, no, I want to do it now. And then we put him in another one to build it out.
Yeah, I want to be the guy deciding who I'm going to fire or not. That is so cool. Like, first off, the retail manager course is fantastic. Have you found out a way to get like the GI Bill or TA to pay for that?
Yes, we're working on that now. Mark has to go through another certification. We're actually working on the Texas Veterans Commission or the Texas Workforce Commission here too, because they have a program that we get into too, that they give us $2,700 per student we put in that course. So that way it pays for the whole manager's course part. So the soldier doesn't have to come up with any of that money at all. We'll be good for them. So, but yeah, we're reaching out to get into the GI Bill part of it. That takes a little while longer because that's VA money. So VA people, they're a little bit more hit and miss with directional where you should take things. But Mark thinks for sure we can be in there by the end of the year. So it might take us a year to get in there, but he thinks by the end of the year we'll be in the GI Bill. Then the soldiers can use the GI Bill to take our course to get the manager certification. But the challenge we have with that is because of the hours. It's really based on the amount of hours they got to go through the course and how much extra training they get. Years past, there's certain things we have to do. So Mark and I right now are building out that whole platform of the actual track that they're on to track their hours. And once we show that to the VA that they have all the hours required by you guys to be a GI Bill certified course, because it's a certification course. It's not going to be a degree program. It's a certification program. So there's a few other steps we got to take, but we are working on that now. So hopefully we'll get that done here shortly and then we'll be good to go with that too. Because I would love to see that, because part of the GI Bill too is when they're in the course, they'll get that stipend money while they're going through for that BAH, that E5 BAH while they're going through. So that'll help give them extra $1,000 or whatever, $1,200 while they're here. So they'll have that too. So we're really working hard to get that because we know that that's going to be a way they can get into nothing else. They can get into the manager's course. If they don't want to do the whole shebang, they can just at least get into that and then we can get them done. So yeah, that's our goal.
Yeah, find ways for people to don't have any reason to say no. Find reasons that they
can. And that's what it's about. It's a no-brainer, man. You got your GI Bill. Even if you don't want to do this, having a certification is going to give you a fallback in case you need it later. Because, like I said, there are some major organizations out there that recognize this as a step above on your resume. If you have this on your resume, you're going to get that extra notch above the guy who doesn't, because you've been through the training to understand how to run retail management stores. Because that's what this training does. It teaches you how to run retail manager stores. So retail. So Walmarts, McDonald's. Fucking being a manager, you'll know exactly how to do. We're going to give you all that training before you even get out. So you already kind of have an understanding of it when you get out. So it gives you an edge. So like I told Mark, I said, we got to get this locked in, man, because that is going to give us the edge in the skill bridge, because you got twofold. You got the interesting, and then you got the franchise opportunity. Because we don't say it's a franchise deal. You have to select to do that after you've graduated everything. And then once you do, yep, then we put you in the franchise track. And then we send you out and we do it. It's a whole separate thing. But it leads from the skill bridge part, because we want to grab you while you're still in the Army. We can get you into the course, get you through, and we can make you an apprentice at the franchise as a manager, assistant manager, right off while you're still in the Army. But you come to work every day for me now instead of going to the Army, and the Army's paying you. So you just show up and work for me, and I'm going to teach you all the steps of how to be the manager, how to make the payments, how everything goes out, whatever. And then you're going to know. And then when you're done, you say, yeah, I want to do this. And then we go, okay, where do you want to be? Here locally? Do you want to go somewhere? Oh, I want to go to Cincinnati. All right. Then my group, we go out and we go find a spot in Cincinnati. We build a franchise out, and then we send your ass home and we go. I go with you for the first couple of weeks to make sure you know how to stand it up. Once you're up, I pop smoke, come back here to Killeen. I'm good. Good luck. You know what I'm saying? If you need me, call me. If you need us, call us. You know, that kind of thing. But the franchise is going to take care of a lot of that too, because the franchise walks you through a meticulous list of things you got to get done. And then you're pretty much working with them anyway, because they're the ones that are going to make or break where you're at. We're just there to kind of be that emotional support and that push you got to keep going. I know it's frustrating, but keep going. It's just, they're going to be the cookie, you know, because us coming to the military, it's hard for somebody to tell me how I got to run my business. You know what I mean? Like a whole timeout, you know what I mean? So, but these guys do a good job of it. So they're really good. So we're hoping that'll work out. Yeah. It's going to be exciting, man. Once we get it, we're hoping to launch February 1st, when we're hoping to start our first class. And plus we just signed up with a drone we're going to add something else to it. Then we're teaching guys how to fly those drones so they can actually get a license to fly drones. Because now you have to be licensed to fly drones now, the ones that go up and like do like architectural pictures and all that shit. The big, you know, they're not those giant fly plane ones, but they, you know, the big size ones that go up and do the so we're going to be training people to do that too. And we got a company that's going to come on. And when we finish training them, they're the ones going to help find the job. So we're just going to push them back to them, and they're going to help find employment, and then we're going to go. And she's got all the hookups for that. So we're like, yeah, we're in. So yeah, so we're doing a whole lot, man. It's crazy, but it never stops.
I'm loving this whole vision that you have here. I love your enthusiasm, how well thought out it is. Let's say I am in the nonprofit world, and you say something like DoD SkillBridge, and you think, oh man, free paid volunteers that I don't have to pay. What are the steps that a nonprofit would have to do to become a partner with the DoD SkillBridge?
Well, for SkillBridge, you have to show the end result is they have a job with you at the end. So it's not like a volunteer. You would have to say, hey, I will bring you on as an apprentice, so to speak, as a, you know, as a project manager or a department head of whatever. And then once they finish the program, you would have to be able to say, yeah, we're bringing them on now full time. We're going to pay them. Here's what they're going to make. So the layout of all this is that's what we had to do. That's why we couldn't necessarily do the franchise thing. It had to be the manager's course. That's what we're training them to be, because even then we're training them to be the manager of a franchise because they got the retail management training. Then we fold them into the retail thing. So for you, for instance, for a nonprofit, they've been talking about that, me using it too, because if I can't hire them at the franchise, I can hire them here and still pay them $20 an hour here to work for me after they've completed the course. But when they're in SkillBridge, I can even have them working here. Da, da, da. And then when they're done, I hire them here at Operation Family Support to work for me here, paying them $20 an hour or whatever it is to run a program or run a director or whatever. But it's not like volunteering. It's more of, it would have to be a staff position. And that's the challenge a lot of nonprofits would have, because you really got to make sure there's positions that make sense for this when they get through the program, that they can come into that to help you as a nonprofit leader. But hey, yeah, I need a guy. I need another good NCO or good officer to come in and manage my, you know, friggin' whatever program I have. And I want him to be the director. He'll manage fundraising. So I want to prepare him for that, so I can prepare him by having him SkillBridge and he's here every day. And then, but then when he graduates or gets out of the military, separates, retires, whatever, now I got to hire him. So now it's the official hiring has to happen, because that's the only way SkillBridge will let you in, if there's an official hire after the completion of the SkillBridge program. So it literally has to be, yes, he's going to be hired. We're going to have a job for him. That doesn't necessarily be for us, but we will have him a job in a certain amount of time after he finishes. So that's kind of the criteria that SkillBridge has. That's why SkillBridge could be a very beneficial thing, but it could also be shooting yourself in the foot, because some of these kids are going to come through the program. Let's just be honest. You know, 10% of whatever's going to come through, there's going to be one dud in the group. Going to be a dud. You know what I mean? There's going to be a dud that's just not going to be viable to bring on because you can't trust them or whatever. There might be a trustworthy issue or maturity issue or whatever. And you're like, I'm not paying this dude $20 an hour. He's a moron or whatever. And it's not because that's the fear. So that, because even Mark told me that. I said, look, man, we're going to get a few duds and we got to have a resolved way to get through this. I said, well, then Mark, we need to identify those duds right away so that we can start to try to eliminate them out of the program before they graduate. If we don't think they're going to cut the mustard at the end, there's got to be a fail-safe for us to make sure that we don't bring them all the way through with us. We'll have to send SkillBridge a thing and say, hey, this guy's not meeting the criteria. You know, but there's ways for us to report to SkillBridge too. So, but that's what it is. I mean, yeah, it'd be great for me. Like, I plan on hiring a couple of people from through SkillBridge for me to work here at the charity, because I think it would be good to have a mindset of reach, because I have a thrift store. I could hire him as my general manager of my thrift store, pay him $20 an hour to run my thrift store if I had to, and then have him down there running that store the way and having it changed to so it's generating more funds or whatever. So there's a lot of ways around it, but it's really... It would be solely, I guess it would look at like what your nonprofit does and then how many positions you really have in it that you need filled, and then how many positions you really think are going to benefit from having that type of individual come through a course like that and then fill it. So it's kind of a catch 22, I guess, but there's benefit to it and it can be done. I just think there'd be more challenges doing it specifically for a nonprofit, because I don't think there's any out there right now, because most nonprofits don't have the budget to be hiring people to pay them a certain amount of money, you know, for a certain time period. Because not that SkillBridge has a lock-in amount that you have to pay them per hour, but when you can promote how much you're going to pay them per hour or start, it gives you an edge with SkillBridge too, because they can see, okay, the soldier's going to be okay when he gets out because he's going to be making 10, 15, 20 bucks an hour or whatever. So yeah, we wanted to go through that program with them because we know they're going to get a job. It's going to be sustaining their families because they're going to make enough money. So, and then again, that comes back to your whole environment, where you're at, what the median income is, where you live, you know what I'm saying, where that soldier's going to live and work. So a lot of that gets put into play. So it's a challenge though. SkillBridge is fun, but there's going to be ups and downs, I can tell. I mean, I can tell it's not going to be a perfect system, but it's going to be a perfect venue to build the system I'm trying to build. It may not turn out perfect, but the way that it flows, it should flow the way I need it to flow to benefit the veteran or the soldier getting out, that I can get him a job or a lifestyle change, because now he's going to be a business owner. And that's what I want to be able to do. So I know once I get the first guy or gal through it and they own a franchise after 3 or 4 years, they're going to be like an off the chart wall, all kind of shit for me. Cause I'll go, tell them girl, tell them what, and then she can be like, blah, blah, and then everybody want to sign up for it because I only need one. You know what I mean? Because if they see they own the business now after 4 years, they went through the pro and 4 years later, they own the business. I mean, come on, who wouldn't want to do that coming out of the military? Cause me, the first thing I did when I was a senior NCO, I got out, I didn't want to work for nobody. I was tired of working for my colonels and sergeant majors. I wanted to be on my own. I wanted to have my own. And that's why I eventually got to the nonprofit. But then I'm like, ooh, wait a minute. There's other stuff I could be doing that could be more beneficial financially for my family. Because like I said, I don't take a paycheck here. So I started other companies to help subsidize some of the needs that the nonprofit has. Because like my liquor company that I own, Sergeant Ritter Spirits, I own Phantom Freelancing, Combat Boxes. I'm a part owner of an ABA basketball team, blah, blah. So I have a lot of other things that I own that I help try to funnel money to my nonprofit, so I don't ask people for money all the time. I'm trying to do residual income that comes in. So a big part for me was that's why I'm starting the franchise of Axe Link for myself, because now I know every month my business can now start donating to this nonprofit every month, $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 every month if I want to, because it's going to have that kind of income coming in. So I can really help this nonprofit really grow and have more money, so we can hire more people even if we need to, blah, blah, blah. So that's my goal eventually is that my business is support my nonprofit, because I'm kind of selfish that way about my nonprofit. But the Skillbridge thing, back to that, I think it's a very beneficial program, but it's not easy to get into. And even when you're in it, it's got a lot of, you know, checks and balances you got to make sure you maintain to keep your status that way. So it's a challenge. But I think I hired the right guy to run it because he's got a lot of experience with it. So.
Yeah, I think so. I know Joel. I know he's a fantastic guy. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, Joel was on it. Yeah.
What do you wish you knew before you started your nonprofit?
The thing I would have wanted to know most is more about the business side of the tax, like the tax ride, the tax stuff you have to do. Because even though you're not probably, you don't pay tax, when you get money that comes in from donations or whatever, the way you report it is so, what's the right word? Anal retentive. I mean, the IRS is really anal retentive about how you report every little thing that comes in, especially in certain amounts. Like if you get a donation of $10,000 or $5,000 or more, they want specifics. Like they want me to report specifics to them. So I'm like, oh shit, you know, what? It's just a lady came over the check for 10 grand. What do you mean? What specifics do you want? She gave me a check for $10,000. But they want to know that kind of money comes in that bulk. So there were some things that I would, and then the business side of it, just running a regular business, managing people from our positions as a CEO, right? So as a CEO, you're not down in the weeds so much as you were when you were a young soldier, sailor, or whatever. You're not down there anymore, right? So, but you're trying to manage the things that are down there, but you're not down there. So it makes it more challenging for me because I was always a hands-on leader. Like even when I was a first sergeant, I would take my guys to Mopal. I'd be out there sweeping the line or doing whatever with my soldiers because I'm like, the faster we get it done, the faster we get the hell out of here. So if I can help and make it faster, I'm helping. So give me a broom and I'd be pushed. But that was me though. And see, like here, I have people that I've hired and put in positions and they don't like that I'm down there. So I have to stay away because I want to keep my leadership happy, but I also want to make sure the job gets done. So I would tell you this, if you're going to start a nonprofit, first of all, make sure you do some research on the IRS and the tax, all the tax stuff that you have to report, not the tax stuff that like you're exempt and all that's easy. You just show your tax ID number, you're good. But I'm talking about like your reporting, your 990 and your tax returns and stuff that you have to report. It's a little bit more in depth than people make it seem. I've hired people now that do it for me. And even then that I hired, I still got to go through it. I still got to go through the fine tooth comb because I got to look at numbers to make sure those numbers make sense based on what I know we brought in every month. Because I know how much money I bring in every month to my nonprofit. I know every down to the nickel how much money I bring in every month. So I have a general idea of what that number should be. And if that number is skewed, I'm like, oh shit, so we missed something. Somebody missed something. So let's go find one. So because that's detrimental to your nonprofit too. Because if somebody researches your 990 and looks at your tax return and it says you made $1 million and you really made 300,000, or you made 300,000 and it reported you made $1 million, that can really skew the way people look at your nonprofit and the way people perceive what you're doing as far as your business ethics and the way you're running your nonprofit. So those are some of the things that I would caution people to, just because nonprofit world is not, it's still a business. Even though it's a nonprofit, you still have to run it like a regular business. You have to have a CFO, you have to have a CEO, you have to have a, you know, project manager or department heads, because you have to have leadership under you that you can trust that's going to do the job you need to do. And they have the same vision you have for your nonprofit. Because if their end result is they're trying to complete your vision or your mission, then I can accept some mistakes and some things that happen wrong because they were focused on the mission. But if people are just being belligerently stupid or whatever, and you don't, and you're not monitoring and catching, because I meet with my staff every Friday, we have a meeting. And then I have separate meetings with different staff members because when I see certain numbers, I'm like, hey, get in here. I need to talk to you because something ain't looking right. Or you, something don't look, so come here, we got to talk about this, figure this out. So there's a lot of, I don't want to say micromanaging, but there's a lot of managing. I wouldn't call it micromanaging. I just call it managing because I don't get into the weeds what they do, but I, when I see something that doesn't look right, I call them in. So I had to prepare myself for that too, because I wasn't ready for that. Because I thought when I hired people to be in those positions, I wouldn't have to manage that part of it. But there's something, you got to manage everything. You know, that's kind of the way it works. So, and the other thing I would say is this, the community pressure you get sometimes, the expectation your community has for your nonprofit and what you do for your community can be a little bit overwhelming at times. And the demand on your time, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen out there listening. When you're the CEO of a nonprofit that's successful in a community of people where they need you, where your nonprofit mission is needed, the amount of time people want from you is unrelenting. Like I get calls, well, my phone doesn't stop ringing from the time I come to work till the time I go home. And even when I get home, it'll ring, or I get text messages or emails. Hey, John, we need you. Hey, Nick, we need you to do that. Hey, John, what the damn? You know what I'm saying? Like, I can only be in three places at once. You know what I'm saying? I can't be in four places at once. And then I get calls from the base all the time. Like, first time to call me, hey, I have a soldier that needs this. Yep, send him over top. I got him, whatever. Or I have the bank on post. They'll call me all the time with soldiers that come in with financial issues. I help square them away, you know? So I got all these people reaching out all the time to me directly. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, can you, yeah, send them over, we'll help them. But it's relentless. It's relentless. And you got to have the type of demeanor that can, one, absorb that, and two, understand how to control that absorption so it doesn't explode and make your nonprofit look bad because you lose your cool or whatever. So if you're going to start a nonprofit, first of all, like me and Travis were talking this before we started, you got to make sure you check out the environment you're in. Is there a need for what your nonprofit's going to do? And if there is a need, how much of a need? Because if there's a tremendous need for it and you're starting up, you're not going to be able to cover all of it. You're going to have to start slow and work your way up. So you have to slowly build your mission statement and adjust it as you go, as you grow and get more donations and more money in, because that's what's going to make you more successful. Is the more money you bring in, the more you can do. But you can't do nothing without the money in, because even though we're a nonprofit, we got to raise money. We got to have money to do the things we do for these people we help, no matter what your specialty is going to be in your mission. So just be patient and understand that in the end, your time is going to be very, very demanded. Because I literally will talk to anybody who comes in. Like everybody has access to me all the time. If I'm up here in my office and there's somebody downstairs in my thrift store and they want to talk to me, my team will come up. Hey, there's a soldier when I want to talk to you. All right, send them up. Or I'll come down there and talk to them. And I stop what I'm doing. I go talk to them. So you got to, and there's only a few hours a day where I lock my door and say, nobody's going to bother me for that. Just tell them to call back or whatever, because I got to get shit done. But for the most part, I'm available all the time. And that can be a little taxing. You can get a little bit worn out. And the other thing I would say is you've got to watch your mental fatigue, because you do get tired because your brain is going 100 miles an hour all the time trying to figure out solutions to problems that you're going to run into. So be patient if you're going to run a nonprofit, because it's going to be hard.
I love the fact that you focus on transparency. You know, before we started recording, we were talking about transparency for nonprofits. And I love your take on it. Be like, I'm an open book. And if you want to see it, here's the book. Take a look.
And I think any nonprofit that's worth their salt is going to be transparent that way. They should be worried about how much they make. If they're a CEO and they're making an absorbent amount of money, they should be very okay with people seeing that that's how much they make. Because if they think they're justified in making it, then God bless them. But show them the books, though. Show them what you make. Because they deserve to know, if I'm donating to that charity, how much is going to go in your pocket? You know what I mean? Because the way I look at it is, I don't take a paycheck from my nonprofit. I pay my staff because they deserve to get paid what I can afford to pay them based on how much we bring in. And they don't make what they really deserve, really, honestly. I think all nine of my employees last year combined was $72,000 for nine people. So do that math. Divide 72 by nine. That's how much they made in a year. So they're here because they believe in the mission, they believe in me, and they want to help me. So they're willing to take whatever I can afford to pay them, and they're happy with that. And they're here. So I got lucky. You know what I'm saying? I don't have to worry about paying somebody some astronomical salary to be here. But some nonprofits, I think that's the problem this country has with nonprofits, like the big ones that we've talked about. I'm not going to start dropping bombs in here, but there's some nonprofits out there, their CEOs are making six figures. They're making $36,000, $37,000 a month, and they're supposed to be helping people in this community, in our country. And granted, they're a CEO and they think, oh, because I'm a CEO, I should make a percentage. No, Sarge, if you're in the nonprofit field, you're not in it for the money. You're in it for the mission that you want to get behind. All right. Now, some of those CEOs might get paid that much and then donate a lot of it back to their charity. I don't know, because you don't know that person. So I'm not going to point fingers and say they're bad people. I'm just saying their 990 shows that they make $800,000 a year, which is $36,000 a month. and their nonprofit brought in over $3.4 billion or whatever, that's fine. Okay. But if you want to be in the corporate world, go be in the corporate world and go make that kind of money in corporate world. Be proud of yourself. And be, but if you're in the nonprofit sector, that $800,000 check, how many families could that feed in any state, any country, whatever? That would feed a lot of people. $800,000, I could buy a lot of groceries with $800,000. You know what I'm saying? So you got to stop and think about those things. So that's why with our nonprofit, or my nonprofit especially, I don't take a pension. Now, I do budget for a paycheck for me. Understand this? Because what, I'm not going to be here forever. So in our budget, they take so much money out. I think $2,500 is what I would have paid myself, I said, when I started this. Because I thought $1,200 every, $1,250 every 2 weeks is fair if I'm here 60, 80 hours a week. So I think I told them $2,500 would be my salary. So $2,500 of our budget every month goes out. We put it into a money market account. If we need it, we can get to it and use it for the charity. But if not, it sits there. Because what it's doing is making money for the charity on the side. But that way, eventually, when I leave, the person that fills my seat can say, okay, well, I want a paycheck, so I want that 20. And then we already have it in the budget for them to get paid, right? I don't take it. It gets put into something to make money for the charity. And or if we need it for something else, we can grab it and use it for a bill or whatever that might pop up or whatever. And we use it for that. But I've budgeted it in because I want to be, I'm not going to be here forever. And I know that I'll be the founder of it forever, but I won't be here forever because I don't want to be here forever. I want to find somebody else that has a passion about what I do that I can mentor and train. And eventually say, okay, yeah, now you're going to take over. I'm going to step down. I got other things I want to do. So you're going to take over. That's my goal. Maybe in 5 to 10 years, I find somebody I can just pass this off to and then just be proud that I helped start it and I can move on and let them run it and do whatever. But, you know, we all aren't going to be here forever. We can't be in this job forever. So I have to prep that I'm not going to be here forever. Because I just talked to a young man I met on LinkedIn that's helped me build out a whole bunch of things to help me sustain for the changes that are going to happen in the charity in the next 10 years, like staff and everything else. So he can help me financially prepare for all that stuff so we're ready so we don't get shot in the foot because we don't have funding to take care of it. So and he's a really cool dude. So, and he's a veteran himself, but that's cool. So, but there's a lot you got to do with a nonprofit. It's nuts, man. The amount of work you put into a nonprofit is crazy.
If you want to be in the nonprofit and make a load of money, get into the medical world because their CEOs make between 12 and 25 million a year, but they're charging everything through insurance and nonprofits, just a check, tax status, not a condition of your heart. But
yeah, I always tell people, if you want to make money in nonprofit, get into cancer or get into medical. Because those were the two people who donate for cancer research or cancer, and then or medical stuff, like you're trying to do medical procedures or whatever, because they can bill the insurance companies. That's where they get their money instead of billing the clients. Yeah, but it's nuts, man.
Well, hey, as we're wrapping up here, Nick, I love the discussion that we've had today. We talked about being an open book, doing the DoD skill bridge, and the fantastic things you're doing at Operation Fan Support. What kind of parting words or parting shots would you have for the audience here listening today?
I kind of mentioned it earlier, but if you're going to support a nonprofit, I tell everybody that I meet, find a nonprofit in your community that you think is doing the right things for your community. Because I tell people this all the time, if we can't make our own community stronger and better every day, we're failing ourselves as Americans. Because if we make our own community strong, where people want to come to our community and live here because our community has got stronger and healthier and better, and people want to come, that shows people that there's people in this community that care about each other, and that our community cares, and there isn't as much violence, there isn't as much crime, because we all care about each other. And if you're donating to those local nonprofits that are helping support the kids and the families and all the things that are in your own community, that's where you're also going to see the biggest impact for your donation dollars, because you're going to see that food bank or that child development thing or that women's shelter or whatever it might have been, they're able to provide more services to people in your community that are going through harder times or whatever, because they're in your community. You can see it. Because I tell people all the time, come by and see what we do. Come by on a Saturday and just look at the line outside my building. And you'll see how many people really need this help, how much of an impact we are making on this community. And you'll see that your donations here make a difference right here in Killeen, not in Texas, not in America, not right here in our city. You're making an impact because the money you donate to me is going to go right back to the families that live in this community or right back to the organization. You see what I'm saying? So that would be my shout out to everybody to listen. Find a nonprofit. It's always great to support other nonprofits too. Like if you live in Oklahoma and you want to send me some money for my nonprofit, God bless you. You know what I'm saying? And I appreciate it. But I would honestly rather you find a local nonprofit in your area that helps the people that live in your community and support them because they need it and it's going to make an impact on your life because it could change one. Think about this. The one nonprofit you donate to might be helping some young kids, whatever, and that kid that it helped might take him down a different path instead of becoming a drug guy and a thug and whatever. Now he turned in and he went back to school and now you saved and got somebody bad that would have been bad on the streets doing negative things. You took him down another path. All because you made an extra $100 donation this month to that nonprofit and they let them put that kid through some kind of program. So you got to think about it. If you think about it that way, you'll want to invest in your community and you'll want to help those nonprofits live there because you could make it safer for your kids to live where they live, you know, or you and your wife to live where you live, or you and your husband. So just that would be my process. My shout out would be find a local nonprofit that you think you can support and believe in and work for them, volunteer for them and donate to them and get behind them, because it's only going to make your life better where you live if your community is stronger. So that's how I would shout it out.
Yeah, and if you were giving money to nonprofits in the 80s and 90s in northern Minnesota, the kid that you helped might have been me. So thank you very much for that. And thank you, Nick, for all that you do and for being a guest today.
Well, thanks for having me on, brother. I appreciate you.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.